590 WKZO. It is the trifecta, the unofecta today. It's Jim. Tomorrow, Dave Pulaski, who is the chairman of the Kalamazoo County Democratic Party, will be in. Talk a little bit about what happened on Labor Day and all sorts of fun things. Roger filling in for Lori today and tomorrow and whatnot. So, hey, we're having fun, okay? Just, you know, for what it's worth. Anyway, so we're waiting on a phone call from CBS military analyst Mike Lyons. Hopefully this is him. Major Lyons, how are you?
Hey, Mike Lyons here, sure.
All right. It is him. Hey, you know, obviously everybody's got their mind and their what's going on in the Syria. We've got, you know, Secretary of State Kerry is testifying now in front of the Senate and, you know, and on. All right. So I want to ask you, and again, we're talking with Mike Lyons from CBS News, a military expert. First of all, we know no boots on the ground because that's kind of been beaten into our heads a little. But if that's the case, will the airstrikes accomplish the mission, whatever the mission is?
You know, if the mission is to rid the Syrian government of their chemical weapon capability, I think it's pretty Pollyannish to think that our military can do that. Hopefully that's not the advice that the chairman is giving the president, unless we have some kind of chemical-seeking weapon missile structure or something, which we don't. I don't see how that's the case. And if we decide to launch some kind of a strike into Syria, that he couldn't turn around and launch another chemical attack against his people. That's a pretty lofty goal and ambition without putting boots on the ground.
What? And I guess I want to ask a question is, did we learn any lessons from Kosovo in 1999, or are we bound to repeat the same thing that happened there?
Well, Kosovo, the situation in Syria is a little different, and it's because of kind of space and time. In Kosovo, the boundaries gave the military a little more of an opportunity to put, first of all, U.S. troops were on the ground there as well, and Blue Helmet forces were there. But the way the no-fly zone worked there, it was very clear that in all of the different sides, the Serbians, the Croats, couldn't cross certain boundaries on the ground or else they'd be attacked from the air. This situation in Syria right now is fundamentally in neighborhoods in Damascus that the same kind of military tactic wouldn't work because you're in civilian built-up areas and you wouldn't have that same clarity with regard to who could cross the line, who couldn't cross the line. So you wouldn't be able to have these protection and safe zones for civilians as clearly as we had them in Kosovo back in 95.
Talking with Mike Lyons of CBS News about the situation in Syria. All right, so let me ask you this. John McCain, Senator McCain, came out and said he's with the president on this, but he specifically said Syrian air defenses have to be destroyed for any kind of positive effect. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that now you're getting into well past the objective of limiting their ability to launch chemical attacks. If we go after taking out their air defenses, all we're doing is keeping them from potentially protecting themselves or attacking us. So mission creep is going to be the word here as things change and evolve in this what's really an act of war. I'm just surprised that the government is not saying that this is potentially really an act of war. I just don't see how we get away with attacking another sovereign nation that attacked us with regard to the situation on the ground there without calling it that.
Let me dovetail off that because when we did what we did in Libya, nobody liked Libya at that time. But Syria's got friends, obviously, Russia being one of them. Is this a totally different situation when you were talking about mission creep? If you get away from what you're trying to do, does that not endanger relationships with some of Syria's friends?
Syria's friends are not necessarily our friends, the key one being Russia, and Secretary Head was speaking to that. I thought his explanation wasn't very good about them being more of a geopolitical adversary there. I don't kind of really understand that because Russia provides Syria tremendous support. What if Russia decides to put 25,000 troops inside of Syria to shore up defenses or protect civilians or something there? I mean, it really creates a problem if we start launching cruise missiles and next thing, you know, Russian soldiers are killed. So, I don't believe that we should be as concerned with Syrian friends, with the exception of Russia, who would like to try to cajole back to our side on this.
Well, because one of the things that's been talked about, and we're talking with Mike Lyons from CBS News, one of the things that they've talked about, Mike, is the fact that the Russians are going to stonewall at the UN. Have we exhausted all of the United Nations efforts so far before we start talking about we're going to do this, we're going to do this?
Well, we're not going to get Security Council approval because it's not only Russia that won't approve it, but neither will the Chinese. So that the chances of that are not happening. The question is whether or not the full UN body addresses it and whether we can control that agenda or whether that is a reality in the short term. It doesn't look like that we're going to have any kind of say or any kind of input into that in at least the next 30 days. And while I don't believe time is of a factor here, there's really no element of surprise in any kind of attack we make. I think that 30 days from now, the world's different. So many things have happened, could have been overcome by events before the UN gets involved.
Do we have any kind of a chance to negotiate with Russia, along with Russia, about this?
That's a great point, and I think that countries act in their own best interests. If there's something that we have the Russians want, I think it's everything's up for negotiation. I think we have to consider that because Russia could be critical in getting at least the Assad government to stand down on the civil war. Now, we have a president that says Assad must go, and that really means it's code for regime change. The chemical weapons that he's used, and that's why we're going to use our military force, but really in military forces is normally used in regime change. So, the administration is having a really hard time explaining what they're trying to do, but negotiating with Russia, if that was possible, could be something to at least get the fighting to stop.
Now, I'm talking about President Assad. I was watching a CNN report where I guess one of the reporters talked with him. He's basically got that show me the money attitude. He's like, look, you guys proved to show me where you've got proof that we're using chemical weapons without betraying any of our military intelligence avenues or anything. Is there a way possible for us to be able to indicate to the public that, yeah, we have, we have information, France has information. This is how we can prove this is going to happen.
I think the problem with that is people would be questioning where it came from, and unfortunately that could have come from Israel or it could have come from another country, which could be the proof. I mean, the ultimate proof would be a radar report of the backward azimuth of the artillery rounds where they were launched from versus the targeted hit at an approximate date time group. That shows that chemical weapons were potentially marshaled in that area, then launched to this other area. We could have gotten that information from Israel. Now, we don't want to necessarily drag Israel into this, but it's likely that's where that came from. And that's the kind of proof I think we have to see. The government does have to produce to us in order for us to launch this military strike. It just can't be this forensic dot-connecting objective is what they've been doing so far. It's got to be a lot more specific than that.
We're talking with Mike Lyons of CBS News on the situation in Syria. There's another avenue, I guess, that I want to ask about. And, I was in the military as well as an enlisted man. And, you do what you're told. And that's pretty, you don't ask questions. But at some point in time, when do we as a collective country decide that we're not the policeman of the world anymore? And at what limit? I mean, because what they're telling us now is that because it was chemical weapons, it's a humanitarian issue. It's a moral issue. We have to, this type of thing. But, Mike, where do you draw the line? Where do you say, okay, we can't just do this all the time?
That's a tough question. I think that, we seem to, kind of step up to pictures and we step up to what the media reports. We don't seem to necessarily lead on this because there's other atrocities taking place in the world that we haven't been involved with. So I think that, until the politicians change and the people that we elect don't have that same, kind of feeling, we're going to continue to do these kinds of things. Now, a lot of this just has to do with the president a couple of years ago saying Assad must go and chemical weapons are the red line. When we say those kinds of things, when we don't back them up is where it creates the problem. The question is, what's the next horrible thing? It's not genocide in Rwanda that's taking place. This is, if you put it in scale, it's still not the scale of anything we've seen past in history that's created world wars or so.
One more real quick question, and this is a social media generated thing. There were a couple of comments I saw on Facebook where people are honked off at the Obama administration because they're going out to help insurgents who apparently are in bed with the people in Afghanistan who are killing our troops. Now, I mean, I hadn't seen any kind of evidence of that, but is that the case? Are these two groups kind of aligned with each other?
They are. They are in the same franchise, so to speak. If they were kind of selling hamburgers, if you want to use that analogy, but that's really what's happening here. We support a rebel group that has Al Qaeda as part of fighting against the Assad government, and what's a jihad that's taking place inside of Syria. And you know, the worst possible scenario is we've now armed these rebels with equipment and material, and then sure enough, it's turned back and used against some Western nation or even the United States. If we find that weapon is shipped into Afghanistan to fight against the U.S. forces, I don't even know what the ramifications of that would be. So, you know, we just have this tendency of getting way too deep and way too involved without really thinking through, well, something might be great in policy, just operationally it might be impossible to enforce.
Yeah, and that seems to be a real issue. Well, I know this is going to be going on for a little while, so hopefully we can have you back on soon and we can talk a little bit about this when we're getting ready to do something or after we've done something and maybe do a postmortem on it. So,
great.
Mike Lyons of CBS News, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Mike Lyons from CBS News, there you go. It's a conundrum. It's going to be an issue. And we're, you know, again, you have that old, you know, what do you do with a situation where, you know that there is something humanitarianly wrong with chemically, you know, bombing your own people. But at the same time, do you draw the line and say, well, we cannot go into another country, and as Mike said, a sovereign country, and make waves without a 100% mission accomplished goal. You know, we're going to be able to do it. What do we want to do? I mean, and they're talking about no boots on the ground. They're talking about this, talking about that. Why would we go there? Would we go there to destroy the chemical weapons? Are we going there to target strategic sites that, like the air defenses, that would put President Assad a little bit back? I don't know. That's the thing. What do you, I mean, oh, it's just, it makes your mind spin. We have talked about the N-word quite a bit, and it keeps popping up. But there is a court case now that kind of brings it all home in a situation that I had alluded to earlier on a version of the show. That'll come up next. It is the Trifecta 590 WKZO. WKZO is the Trifecta, Uno Fecta today on this Tuesday, day after Labor Day. Lots of stuff going on. Yes, weather is nice. It is good. Always contact us via the texting line 80373. Can't guarantee I can pick up the phone on time. So I did have a text about an earlier topic we were talking about. Somebody texted in, abolish the minimum wage. That would bring a surge in entry-level jobs so that employees could gain skills and move on to bigger and better things. Not sure I agree with that 100%, but I mean, it's a thought. All right, so we have talked about, now when Paula Deen was indicated that she had used the N-word in a conversation, and the other situations where someone has thrown the N-word around, it has usually been not a person of color. And one of my arguments was that why should there be a double standard? That comedians, two in particular, Eddie Griffin, Cat Williams, who are very funny but still use the N-word liberally, are allowed to throw it around as much as they want to, but yet anybody else uses it, and whoever they are, black, white, gray, purple, whatever, are accused of racism and being a very bad person. But most of the cases had to do with somebody not of color, somebody who's white or whatever, Hispanic or whatever, using the N-word, and how it was, that's an incredible no-no. But yet black people can throw it around as much as they want to. Well, apparently not anymore. A federal jury rejected the argument that use of the N-word among blacks can be a culturally acceptable term of love and endearment, according to the article, saying that the use in the workplace is hostile and discriminatory no matter what. Jurors awarded $250,000 in compensatory damages to a worker from an employment agency because she was targeted by her boss, who was an African-American, with the N-word many times. The agency is called Strive East Harlem. The case is against a guy by the name of Rob Carmona, and it gave legal airing to what some people see as a double standard surrounding the word. It's a degrading slur when uttered by whites, and I'm not arguing the fact that it's not, that it is or it isn't. It is. You just don't use it. That's all there is to it. But can be used at times with impunity among blacks. But Brandy Johnson told jurors that when being black didn't make it any less hurtful that somebody was targeting her with what she referred to, quote, as a four-minute end tirade about inappropriate workplace attire and unprofessional behavior. Talking about unprofessional behavior. She was offended. She was degraded. She felt disrespected. She basically told jurors, and I'm going to use the quoting fingers here because this is a very powerful quote. When you use the word to an African-American, no matter how many alternative definitions you might try to substitute with the word N, that is no different from calling a Hispanic by the worst possible word you can call a Hispanic, calling a homosexual male the worst possible word you can call a homosexual male. Defense lawyers said that because Carmona's experience with the word was different, and that he was exposed to it in a different way, that they should let him utilize it, and that he's black, he should be able to use it. He said he might actually put his arm around a friend in a company of somebody else and say, "This is my N for 30 years. This means my boy. I love him," or whatever. And he says if he indicated love when he did Johnson to the word, called Johnson that word, and he said yes, and I'm thinking it's a stretch. I don't think so. So again, this could be the case that puts the N-word on trial for those who use it liberally. Not whites, but blacks this time. And see, that was my point. If you're going to eliminate the word completely because of its tastelessness and because it's totally offensive, then everybody has to. So, you know, just because you're a black person and you throw the N-word around, has been said, that's not, I don't think that's, I now this court case is saying no, that's a no-no. You can't do that. All right, let's play phone roulette. Hi, the trifecta. How are you?
Hey.
What's up?
Good.
Yeah, heartbreak again, dude.
Yeah, baby.
Way to go.
Thank you. I'm good at it.
I know you are. You're the best.
Are we on?
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. There you go.
We're playing phone roulette today because I'm the only one here.
Rock on.
So there you go.
Roger is just taking up space anyhow.
Yeah.
So
be nice. Will you? Come on.
I hope he's not listening.
He's probably taking a nap. Is this going to be a case that's actually going to push things a little further along?
No, because I think it's all subjective. I mean, you know, I honestly, when I listened to you introduce the story and you said the word blacks, you know, when blacks can say this, to me,
that's what the story said.
Okay, well, whoever said it, you said it, and it sounded offensive to me. So, you know, where is this going to end? You know, a black guy, a colored guy, an African-American who's offended by somebody else of the same ethnicity using that word, you know, where does this end? I don't think it ever ends. I think that in the end, we all got to get over, you know, the slurs. You know, I'm a honky or a cracker, depending on, you know, where geographically I am when you identify me by my race in a less than superlative description of me and my race. I'm okay with that. You know, we got to get over it.
Does it ever end?
No, I think there are always going to be people who are offended, and okay, there are always going to be people who, you know, don't care. I don't care.
I guess what I'm wondering here, Chris, is because this is the first case of an African-American person bringing suit against another African-American person for using the word that supposedly was allowed, was culturally acceptable within their society, and now all of a sudden she's saying no, it doesn't matter. If it is, you know.
It's going nowhere. Richard Pryor wrote all the my favorite parts of the movie, Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yeah, well.
Yeah, and that was a black guy, you know, making fun of black guys and black issues.
By the way,
and,
did you know that he was up for the Sheriff Bart part?
No, I didn't.
He actually was.
I like Cleavon Little. I don't know.
No, Cleavon Little did a great job. He did. So.
I don't know what else Cleavon was in, but, man, that was
the best.
Awesome.
Was. Thanks, dude.
Yep.
The heartbreak right on the nose, man. You are so good. You really are. Thanks, Chris. I don't know. I always thought Dick Gregory's comment was the best. He told his mother anybody anytime said the N-word, he was just promoting his autobiography. CBS and local news coming up next. It is the Trifecta. WKZO, it is the Trifecta. It's Jim. It's Jim, that's it, guys. That's all you get today. So, what can I tell you? It's the Uno Effecta today. So Roger will be back on Thursday, and Dave Pulaski will be in with me tomorrow. By the way, Trifecta brought to you in part by Bronson Children's Hospital's Walk and 5K Run coming up September 29th. Register at bronsonhealth.com/walkrun. All right. Really, we got to tackle a couple of topics here. One that we'll talk about a little bit, and this other one is kind of a fun one. It's I do love talking about this. All right, so the new International Trade Crossing, or NITC, still moving forward. The new thing, of course, is land acquisition. They have to buy the land, state to buy the land up, so it's a move forward. The government has given its go-ahead with this thing, issuing a presidential permit back in April, which pretty much will allow the project to move forward in spite of the lawsuits that have been filed by my friend Marty.
What a maroon.
Because, of course, he owns the Mackinac. Pfft. You know what? Yeah, okay. I'm going to give myself a buzzer for that one. The Ambassador Bridge, which we all know is in pristine shape and will last hundreds of years. But Marty appears to say that he needs to build that second bridge because, by golly, he doesn't have enough money.
What a maroon.
So anyway, they're going to have, it'll be in the Delray neighborhood. So this thing's not going to get done for like 7 years. It's estimated to cost $2.15 billion as of 2009. So I have no clue what it's now. But the Canadian government wants to ease the traffic flow in Windsor. This is going to be an easy way to do it because it's going to be taken, and it will connect I-75 with Highway 401 in Windsor. So it's going to steer everything away from the downtown area. So anyway, land acquisition going on for that. And back to our discussion when we were talking about the N-word and court and all that. Texter, you can call me a European-American with all kinds of German, Dutch, English heritage. They'll laugh out loud. Okay. Well, you know, this is true. You can call me the same thing. I guess. I have Irish blood. You call me a Mick, I suppose. That may be a term of endearment for one from one Irishman to another, but maybe not from somebody who's not Irish. Who knows? So there may be some premise to what Chris was saying, and that we just ought to let it go for what it's worth. Social media will do you in if you are not careful. Not just people, but companies. How many, I'll raise my hand. How many people have ever been on an airplane trip and they've lost your luggage? Seriously, I was flying, had to, switch planes. Don't know where my luggage went, but it didn't go with me. And it's happened on more than one occasion. One time they sent me to JFK. My luggage went to LaGuardia. So they had to send somebody over to LaGuardia to get my luggage and bring it over. And then put it on the plane. And then it still got lost again. So, apparently there was a gentleman who was mad because British Airways lost his luggage. Oh, and then they wouldn't return his emails. There's the problem right there. So, here's this guy goes on Twitter to vent, and he's decided this is going to be a good thing. But did he just talk to his followers? Oh, no. What he did was he purchased what's called promoted tweets, which is a form of advertising on Twitter, if you've ever seen it. Okay? So he targeted his ads to all 302,000 followers of British Airways. And here was his tweet, using the quoting fingers. "Don't fly at British Airways," the man with a handle wrote on Sunday. "Their customer service is horrendous." It continues on with the quoting fingers. "British Airways is the worst airline ever. Lost my luggage and can't even track it down. Absolutely pathetic. Thanks for ruining my European Union business trip, British Airways. I shouldn't have flown British Airways. Never flying with you again." He's going to continue running the ads until, he says, British Airways fixes the mess. Now, other people have picked up on this tweet, passing it around, and apparently he's not the only one who's not happy with British Airways. There are other unhappy, patting him on the back for speaking out against British Airways on Twitter. Now, British Airways finally responded yesterday, blaming the delay on its Twitter feed only being open from 9 o'clock to 1700 hours, which is 5 o'clock, 9 to 5, Greenwich Mean Time. And asked, not 24 hours, by the way, and asked the customer to send over his luggage information. But other airlines are joining in. JetBlue tweeted, their SVP of marketing tweeted, quote, "Interesting, a disgruntled customer is buying a promoted tweet slamming a brand where they had a bad experience. That's a new trend in itself." And you've got to wonder now, because apparently this guy doesn't care about the money. He doesn't care about the money. Not a bit. Not one single solitary bet. So you've got to wonder, with all of what's going on with social media, I mean, I can tell you, in a business where that's advertising driven, that one of the most effective sometimes, and sometimes one of the most detrimental forms of advertising, is word of mouth. If you are wronged by a company, by a store, by a business, that experience can be translated into I don't know how many times of you telling someone, look, don't go there. No, you don't want to go there. It's crazy. No, you'd be stupid to go wherever you're going, because I went there and this is what happened. But to go to the links that this guy did, which is to purchase promoted tweets. And I don't know how much a promoted tweet is. I was going to ask our internet guy in the break, our internet guru, Dan, how much a promoted tweet cost. Because this apparently goes out to all 302,000 followers of British Airways. So if you went to a restaurant and you got bad service, I've seen this happen before on Facebook. Post it and say you have, 90, 100 friends, maybe more, who knows. And you post on there and say, we went to restaurant X and it was just, horrible. And this is what happened, blah, 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 blah. And you mention it by name, okay? And this goes out all over Facebook. Well, if you've noticed, people pile on periodically. And you'll either get people to say, I don't know what you're talking about, man. We had the great service and blah, 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 blah. Or you get somebody who agrees with you 100% and goes, I don't understand why anybody still goes in that joint. They are horrible. They are pathetic. They are this. They are that. But with the advent of social media, I'm not going to read the text that I got on the air, but I'm with you. I got my fist in the air. You know what? I will in a second. I will. You've got to wonder how much more of this will happen. If you really are wronged by a company, by a business, by a firm, by somebody, you've got to wonder how far would you go? Would you pay the money to buy a promoted tweet and then, let them have it? All right. Radio Roulette round two. It's trifecta.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
I usually find that people respond to the effect of how much it affected them or how much it cost them. In other words, if I go to McDonald's and if I buy a Big Mac for $5 and it's terrible, you know what? I spent $5.
Yeah.
If I go someplace else and I drop a $300 meal or $300 bill on a meal, and if it's not good, that's a problem.
Well, all right. So let me dovetail off this because this is a really good point. Sometimes the level of money. Okay. I'm going to use a personal example. Okay.
Sure.
I went to a casino in the area. I don't go to casinos very often because I'm not really good at it. Number one, number two, I'm not really good at it. And number three, I'm not a big gambler, but I went to this casino. All right. So I put $2 in one of the penny slot machines, whatever. It would not change the amount of money that I could bet on each line. And so when I hit the button, it spun. And then it spun again, and my money was gone.
And
I'm not stomping up and down or jumping up and down or crazy, but I had my card in my hand, and so I went over to one of the cages, and I said, customer service, and I said, okay, listen to me. This is what happened, blah, 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 blah. And I said, my inclination is to not come here anymore because there's a casino just as far away in the other direction, and there's another casino, and I've got choices. And I tried to get somebody's attention, and I couldn't get anybody. And I said, what I'm putting to you is, what would happen if this happened to somebody who bet more than $2? $2 is nothing. And all the person at the cage told me was, well, thank you very much, and they took my card.
Well, I tell you what, it's I have a feeling that obviously the more you spend, the more you get catered to. That's plain and simple.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's money drives things.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's how it is. As far as I'm concerned, the guy who, anybody who is willing to take their time to patronize the casino should be treated equally, as far as I'm concerned. But
well,
unfortunately,
it was funny because when I was explaining this to my parents, because I went with them, and they go to the casino a lot, their first question was, you would have thought that at the very least they would have called somebody over to apologize for it and just say, well, we're sorry it happened. You want to show us which machine it is so we can take it out of service.
And I'm thinking, right.
You know, or something along those lines. And the thing was, for once, I didn't go over with an attitude. I mean, I went over and I explained it. I thought I was very calm and cool and collected, which doesn't happen very often. And because, I'll flip people off if they blow me off on the highway. except not now, because it's getting to be hunting season.
Right.
And, people have things in their cars. But I'm wondering if, and because I talked with a friend about this, and one of the things they mentioned was maybe they felt that they have enough customers they can lose a few.
Well, absolutely. And
because you only lost $2, they're like, okay, well, then you must not be a real big gambler anyway.
Well, and that's the thing, you take and you do something like that for a customer, and you never know, just because the person spent $2 there, you have no idea when they're going to come back with their bachelor party and drop a $1,000 bill.
Exactly, exactly. So, and that goes back to what you said, treating everybody equally.
Right, exactly.
All right, so, what's your name?
Andy. Kalamazoo.
Thank you very much, Andy. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, have a good day. We did get a text. M Spa should count their blessings. Well, they got blown up on social media. If you remember the story, which has kind of died down of late, it's been under the radar. But M Spa really got nailed because of Facebook. I mean, and I've seen it happen to they form like a site on Facebook. Or a group on Facebook, that's what it is, where, people vent about having gone in this place or, don't go here because this happened and this happened and this happened and this happened. Used to be that word of mouth, if you went out and bought a car, back in my day, get off my lawn, that back in my day, and my parents and, my grandparents' day and whatnot, stores had a tendency to really give you good service. And if you get screwed over for some reason, you would never go back to that store or that car place. You would never go back, and you would tell everybody you knew so that they wouldn't go too. And I still think that's plays a big role, but This one is kind of interesting because of the extent of it, because of the lengths that the customer went. He wasn't satisfied with just his circle. He decided he was going to put his money where his mouth was. And by promoted tweets that targeted everybody, and he says he's going to keep it up until he gets, you know, what he wants, which is some sort of justification or some sort of satisfaction from British Airways. And even though they tweeted and said, look, sorry for the delay, they didn't say they were sorry. All they did was give an explanation. You know? Send us in, we'll look into it. Yeah, well, it took you a while to do it. So, wonder if it's ever going to get resolved. Do you ever burn ants with a magnifying glass on a sidewalk? I've got a real-life example of that coming up as we get ready to wrap things up. It is the Trifecta 590 WKZO. It's the Trifecta 590 WKZO. Jim, by myself today. We get ready to wrap things up. 5 o'clock afternoon news coming up next. Coming up tonight, Tiger Baseball. 6:45 airtime here on 590 WKZO as they take on the Red Sox in Fenway Park once again. Try to pick up another big win as they start to get the pushes on, man. I think it was we're under 30 games now as far as the regular season goes. So we'll have to keep an eye on things and what's going on. All right, so when you were a kid, did you ever take a magnifying glass and burn ants? You know, focus the light and burn ants or other insects or things like that. I think I had a couple of friends even tried it on their hand just to see if it would work. So you remember how this, well, we have a real-life example of this in London. Apparently, traffic is not the only thing they have to be worried about. There is a building that's under construction, officially called 20 Fenchurch Street, but a lot of Londoners call it the walkie-talkie because it has a distinctive shape. Apparently, this 37-floor building reflects rays that melts cars. And if you don't believe it, ask the owner of a very expensive Jaguar XJ, Martin Lindsay, who parked his ride underneath the building. And the thing focused rays from the sun down on his car. He came back out, and panels were warped beyond repair by the beam of light that was reflected down. Now, for their part, the developers say that they're going to pay for the vehicle to be fixed, or if they have to get them a new one, I guess they get a new one. According to the owner of the car, he says, quote, using quoting fingers, Canary Wharf Construction and Land Securities have been very good and have agreed to pay for the damage and accept there is an issue with that they will resolve. Apparently, this guy is in construction and said sometimes things go wrong that you're not sure about, and this is one of them. Right? Also, apparently, previously damaged a van parked on the same street. So, it's caused by the elevation of the sun about 2 hours per day. So what they're probably going to have to do is they're probably going to have to put a block that off and say, okay, you can't park here either from a certain time to a certain time. Or what they could do is every day if they wanted to have fun, if somebody wanted to have that entrepreneurial spirit, what they would do is akin to what Val Kilmer and his friends did to, and I forget his name, William Peterson, I believe it was, played the professor in Real Genius. Do you remember when they put the popcorn in his house? If you've seen the movie, it's hilarious. And they directed a laser to shoot down into his house, and it popped all this popcorn and ruined his house. So what the vendors ought to do, okay, is put a big giant Jiffy Pop thing or something there that will pop popcorn, and then people can have popcorn in the afternoon. See, it's just one of those mayo and the tuna moments that you can have. But apparently they're going to do what they have to do to make sure. It's not the only building, apparently, that will direct light on the ground below. There's a building in the Vidara Hotel in Las Vegas. Apparently it does the same thing. As it melted a hole in a plastic bag that this guy had by his sun lounger at the pool. So they call it the Vidara Death Ray. It's kind of fun. Oh, well. 5 o'clock afternoon news is next. Tigers tonight, 6:45. We'll be back tomorrow with the Trifecta. Have yourselves a great night. Keep it tuned. 590 WKZO. Let's go!
This is Kalamazoo's news station and Kalamazoo's home for Detroit Tiger baseball. 590 WKZO Kalamazoo.